death. We said last week that in talking about God's justice, you recall the God told the children of Israel to destroy the Midianites. And we then had the discussion as to whether or not, you know, why does God do things like that, where there are men, women, and children that are executed, shall we call it? And we discussed the fact that Romans 6:23 says the wages of sin is death, but that we do not necessarily die physically because we sin. Now, we may do some things that are sin and cause a death, but the passage there in Romans, as well as what God told Adam and Eve, that in the day that you eat of the fruit, you shall die. He meant they'd be separated from Him. And I got to thinking that maybe we didn't make it clear that the Midianites, God told them that they were to destroy them, and some of them they kept alive, and they didn't, that were brought back. God deals, and here's what the point that I'm making, God deals with nations differently than He does with individuals. When the nations, and we use that passage that talks about Abraham, God talking to Abraham, that the iniquity of the Amorites was not yet full in the land that He would give to His descendants. So it was 400 years from Abraham until the time that the children of Israel go into the promised land. At that time, the iniquity of the Amorites and the other people was full. I kind of illustrate it like this. With nations, when their iniquity comes full, when their sin, their evil, their corruption becomes so full, God destroys them, or God does whatever He wants to with them. Not so with individuals. I may be a sinner, but I don't die physically because of my sin. Unless, as we said last week, I get drunk or something like that and run into a wall and I kill myself. But anyway, I wanted to point that out, that God deals with nations in a different way than He does individuals. He will destroy a nation because of their sin, because of their corruption, because of their evil. And that's what He did with the Midianites, the Amorites, and that's what He'll be doing with the children of Israel as they go into the land, that God has promised them. Anyway, I got to thinking maybe we didn't make that clear about nations and the difference there in how God treats them. Not only, and I'll try to get off of this right now, not only did God take care of the nations in Canaan when their children went in there, but at least in the Old Testament, we have time and time again that when a nation became wicked, their iniquity was full, then He would bring another nation and destroy that nation. And of course, we're very familiar with the fact that Israel, the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom, once they divided, were taken into captivity, first by the Assyrians and then by the Babylonians. But the Assyrians, in their wickedness, they got their iniquity filled up, as it were. Then God brought the Babylonians against them. But the Babylonians got wicked, and they filled up in their iniquity, so to speak, and so He brought the Medes and Persians against them. And the same thing with the Medes and the Persians. The Greeks destroyed or overcame them, conquered them, as it were. So anyway, that's the way God deals with nations, as different with individuals. Okay, this morning we're in. If you've got a question, it's going to be quick. If you want to ask it. Okay, go ahead.
Well, maybe just a little caveat there that there are instances where God does deal with individuals.
Yes.
Immediately too.
Yeah. That's. Yeah. I'm glad you brought. Ananias, Sapphira. There are instances where God did that. I don't know any instances of Ananias and Sapphira today. Right? But in those days, God did immediately. Nadab and Abihu, when they offered the fire, Ananias and Sapphira, just like that, He killed them. But that was His, and that was individuals. But I don't know anywhere that in the Word that God says, I'll do that to you today.
I think he can.
I don't doubt that.
No. But we won't know because we're not told.
But yep. That's kind of the same with nations too. I mean, you might, a plague or something might come on a nation. God may be judging them, but he hasn't sent us the word that that's exactly what he's doing. So
that's the case with nations as individuals today. We don't know when God may have said this nation is going to be destroyed or this individual. God hasn't told us anything since the New Testament days as to what he does in that realm. Does that mean that he didn't over there in the Old Testament? No, he did. Lesson 13, we've got to get into it. Today this is about the preparing to go into Canaan. Last week we talked about Joshua was appointed as Moses' successor. And we get down here to the second part here where the tribes are settling in the Transjordan. And we have two of the tribes, Reuben and Gad, and three actually, and Manasseh, come and talk to Moses and tell him we would like for us, our families, to be settled on this side. Which is which side of the Jordan River?
East.
On the east side, the Transjordan, as it is called. After the defeat of Sihon and Og and the capture of their lands along the eastern shores of the Dead Sea and the Jordan River, called the Transjordan, as I just mentioned, tribes of Reuben and Gad, the half-tribe of Manasseh, appealed to Moses for possession of the land as their inheritance. So this request kind of raised Moses' eyebrows, as we say. What did he tell them?
Basically, if they don't attend the war, that exactly. They had to attend the war to be able to, I don't remember exactly what he said. They had to be part of the war. I don't remember why, though.
Yeah, you got the right idea. If you don't come across the Jordan with us and conquer those people, it will dishearten. Am I right? Dishearten the Israelites. And so, what does it say about Moses? How did he react there? This says Moses is troubled, fearing the lack of support from these two. Is that what the scripture says, that he was troubled? Chapter 32. What does your version say what Moses' reaction was?
It's in his speech. It's in what he says.
Okay.
Verse 7.
Okay.
Now, why are you discouraging the sons of Israel from crossing over into the land which the Lord has given them?
Okay. Yeah, verse 7 and then down to verse 14, it doesn't exactly say this is the way Moses felt. Numbers 32:14, and behold, you have risen in your father's place, a brood of sinful men, increased still more the fierce anger of the Lord against Israel. For if you turn away from following him, you will again abandon them in the wilderness. He will again abandon them in the wilderness, and you will destroy this people. Then they came to him. Okay, so Moses, I'll just call it, he was upset. As a sheet says here, what does it say? You discourage them? Anyway, what was these three tribes' answer to Moses? Okay, so these three tribes said, well, Moses, we'll go over there and help you conquer those people in that side. And when it's done, then we'll come back to the east side and inherit that land. Let me see if I can find my... Okay. Let's see, what have I got blanked off here? There we go. There's a little bit of a map here you can see. This, the different colors are how the land was divided between the tribes. So over here on the east side, we have Manasseh, Gad, and Reuben, which eventually we'll find out today, I think. I hope so. That's where they settled. Manasseh also had some over there on the west side. He had a whole lot of territory. Okay, now, is there a question? Yeah, why did Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh desire the land on the Transjordan? Why did they want that land over there?
It was pasture land.
It was good land for the cattle. This is Bashan up here. You've heard about the cows of Bashan. They had good pasture over here. Now, some of the mountains over here wouldn't be, but there's land in here, particularly from here about down to there, that was good for pasture. Now, over here, there are some flat places. There's mountains. We may not call them mountains over here, but anyway, there are some valleys in this area here that would be all right for cattle. But over there on the east side, good land, lush for the cattle. And so these three tribes said, that's what we'll do. And did Moses agree with it? Yeah, he did. They did. God did. What did these tribes do before they went with them to conquer the western lands?
Settle their families.
In cities. Okay, so they conquered different cities over here and settled their families and their cattle and so forth on the east side. And then they went to war with the rest of the tribes on the west side. I was looking at these questions here. At first, Moses likened the request to the 10 spies who discouraged the people. That's true. Number 6, if these tribes fail to assist their brethren, their sin would what? I thought this was an interesting quote here. Find them out. Have you ever heard that expression? Your sin will find you out. You knew that was in the Bible, didn't you? Right. Verse 23 of chapter 32. Let me see where I want to start. Yeah, well, this is Moses saying, but if you will not do so, that is, if you will not do according to your agreement, if you will not do so, verse 23 of chapter 32, then behold, you have sinned against the Lord, and be sure your sin will find you out. Build cities for your little ones, etc., etc. So that was the agreement. That's how that the tribe of Manasseh, Gad, and Reuben ended up on the east side. Okay? Brian, did you have your hand up?
Yeah, for a second. Makes you wonder if those tribes had that in mind before Moses off on them.
Yeah.
Versus when Moses starts speaking, verse 6 and onward, kind of makes you, and I guess we'll never know whether they already had that plan in mind that they would send their soldiers with Israel, or when they hear what Moses' concerns were and then came back with, oh, well, we'll do it this way. Either way, it worked out. But
well, they knew the command of the Lord, so that's kind of what
I just wonder if there's a teaching tool in here for us, looking at what Moses did, if it would be more wisdom to say, okay, this concerns me. What did you guys have in mind? Instead of presuming that they're a brood of sinful men.
Yeah. You're talking about Moses' initial reaction.
Yeah, Moses' initial reaction.
Yeah, I don't know, though. Moses, he's put up with these people enough through the years. I can kind of understand why he came back that way, rather than saying, well, now, what do you have in mind here? Do you really, you know? But it would be, as I can't think Brian's getting at, it would be a teaching tool for us from the standpoint that when someone presents something that is seemingly contrary to what would be the best or what the scriptures would say, come back with a question or whatever to clarify the situation, etc.
Okay. Their motives.
Their motives for sure. Anything else, Brian, before we got two hands up back here?
Well, these are the same tribes that later they're going to build an altar, and that gets everybody all all worked up too.
Yeah.
So we've got to remember, this is the tribe. These are the people that are 20 years and under. They weren't. That were 20 years and under.
Yeah.
So
they're
six. These aren't the rebellious ones with evil heart of unbelief. That could be why Moses is concerned here.
Yeah.
He's saying, you're not going there. You're halfway, are you?
Yeah. Ted and Kramer?
I think this...
Ted first, and Kramer, and then...
I'm just curious about that question. I noticed you got all the different color areas on that map up there. Can you also designate what tribe gets what area?
That's on page 2 of this this outline.
Forensic files.
I don't want
it.
He may have, that's for sure. He wanted to. God said no. He said, you go look over the land. Okay. I didn't know whether I wanted to go back to chapter 26 and look at verse 30, chapter 33 at the same time, but it was brought up, Brian brought it up, that these are the people. Let's go back to chapter 26, verse 52. Keep your place there in near chapter 33. Chapter 26, verse 52. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, among these the land shall be divided for an inheritance according to the number of names. Oh, that's not what I was wanting to look at. This is actually an answer to what Ted brought up. It lists all the tribes and so on. There was a census taken in the first part of chapter 26. While I'm here, I'll go ahead and discuss this. And so all the tribes there are listed, and the numbers that were in each tribe. And there were 76,500 in Judah's tribe. There were 64,400 in Dan's tribe, etc. So so Moses, the Lord said to Moses, verse 52, chapter 26, among these, that is, the those that are just numbered, the land shall be divided for an inheritance according to the number of the names. To a large tribe you shall give a large inheritance, and to a small tribe you shall give a small inheritance. Every tribe shall be given its inheritance in proportion to its list. But the land shall be divided by lot. According to the names of the tribes of their fathers, they shall inherit. Their inheritance shall be divided according to lot between the larger and the smaller. Now, that's chapter 26. Let's go to chapter 33. This is what I was going to refer to later, but I wanted to point out something here besides how the land's going to be divided. Chapter 33. Actually, it's the same verses as in chapter 26, beginning with verse 52. Now, let's look at verse 50. The Lord spoke to Moses in the plains of Moab by the Jordan at Jericho, saying, speak to the people of Israel and say to them, when you pass over the Jordan into the land of Canaan, then you shall drive out all the inhabitants of the land before you, and you shall destroy all their figured stones and destroy all their metal images and demolish all their high places. And you shall take possession of the land and settle in it, for I have given the land to you to possess it. You shall inherit the land by lot according to your clans. To a large tribe you shall give a large inheritance, and to a small tribe you shall give a small inheritance. Wherever the lot falls for anyone, that shall be his. According to the tribes of your fathers you shall inherit. But if you do not drive out the inheritance of the land from before you, then those of them whom you let remain shall be as barbs in your eyes and thorns in your sides, and they shall trouble you in the land where you shall dwell. And I will do to you as I thought to do to them. Okay, that's not the verses I was thinking of. I got another passage here. The land then, while I want it, because I thought that's where, the land's going to be divided according to how many is in the tribes. It gets confusing because you look at Manasseh. See how much land he got in the yellow there? And you look at some of the others. Manasseh, there were 52,700. But you look at Issachar is in the red up there by the Sea of Galilee and Naphtali. Issachar had 64,300. That's more than Manasseh. So there is some criteria other than just number as to how they got the land. And there's discussion. God didn't tell us what that was. Are you following me? Okay. In lesson 20, whoever gets to lesson 20, our lesson 20 discusses this. But while we're here, I'll just tell you what it says. This is lesson 20 has to do with Joshua, of course. We're getting that far down. Joshua, the 18th chapter and the 19th chapter, gives the borders and the cities of the four tribes, Simeon, Zebulun, Issachar. That's in those verses. And then it goes on with the others. But the specific criteria God used in granting the land by lot is not clear. Numbers 26 that we just read states that to a large tribe you'll get a large part amount of land. But a simple population acreage ratio doesn't match. As I just said, Manasseh had 52,700 in the census. Issachar had 64,300, and all they got is that red spot. And so what this person thinks is possibly I'll just go ahead and read it and try. Note, for example, that Manasseh, ranked sixth in population, received two large tracts of land on both sides of the Jordan River. Dan, Issachar, and Zebulun ranked 2, 3, and 4 in population. They received smaller portions of land. Perhaps, and this is what this person's perhaps is, the ratio involves the productivity of the land assigned. A smaller population would need more acreage in area that was less fertile. Simeon, the smallest tribe, receives an undefined area in the south in the inheritance of Judah, for the portion of the children of Judah was too much for them. That's another thought there about Simeon down there in the yellow at the bottom. Anyway, so there's something other than just population or a census that determined. Well, That's what this person, I think, is alluding to, that Manasseh, Gad, and Reuben over here, they said it was good land for pasture, so we know that. That maybe those fellows had more of the area, more of the expertise in farming with cattle, et cetera, whereas the others, as you mentioned, might have vineyards. And over here on the west side, there's good vineyard land. Ted? Who was it now? Oh, yeah, they had a reputation for that. I think you're...
Well, would that be have a bearing then on what kind of land they would need? I mean, they weren't farmers or craftsmen or anything.
Well, if the theory that we're talking about is true, that might be an indication there. Here's Benjamin right here. There may be other things involved, but I don't think we'll ever settle the question completely. But there's another thing I was going to look at, and I got off onto that. Let's see. Maybe it's back in chapter. I've got verses 63 through 65, but neither one of these chapters have. Oh, yes, it does. That's chapter 26. Back in chapter 26. This is what I was going to refer to, and I got off one of those other verses. The last verses of chapter 26, verse 63. These were those listed by Moses and Eleazar the priest who listed the people of Israel in the plains of Moab by the Jordan at Jericho. This version used the word listed. You got others that say numbered?
Numbered.
Yeah, okay, that gives us an idea of why the book of Numbers is called Numbers. Verse 64 of chapter 26. But among these there was not one of those listed by Moses, or numbered by Moses and Aaron, the priest, who had listed or numbered the people of Israel in the wilderness of Sinai. For the Lord had said of them, they shall die in the wilderness. Not one of them was left except Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, and Joshua, the son of Nun. Okay, here's what the point that I was wanting to make. Who is he talking about here? Among those that are numbered, not one is numbered in this census here in chapter 26. Who's that? Did I ask it right?
It was the older men. Anyone who, under 20 would go. Anyone who was over 20 didn't go.
Okay.
Yeah,
they died in the wilderness, whatever. So, except for
Joshua and Caleb.
So, the what I'm getting at here is, does God keep His promises? He promised those people that rebelled in the wilderness, you're going to wander around for 40 years and you're not going into the land. And here's the verse that tells us he kept that promise in the sense that he numbered the people, and there's only two of them, according to what he had told them, that were able to go into the land. Joshua and Caleb are over 20 years old, of course, now. They're 60. Anyway, that's all the point I was going to make in that chapter while we were over there, and I went to the other first. Got what I was saying? God keeps His promises, and He did allow Caleb and Joshua to go into the land, but He kept His promise to the others that He said, you're not going to go. Okay, the boundaries of the land. Down at the bottom of page 1, number 3, the boundaries of the land. The general extent of the land is given in Numbers 34. It appears, if you'll read those verses, this is what I wanted to just briefly say here. At the top of the next page, it appears that the northern boundary falls a bit short of what God originally intended. The Euphrates River is mentioned in Deuteronomy 1, verse 7. Under Solomon's reign, the border will eventually reach the Euphrates. Okay, well, just a little bit of a map here. The territory that's mentioned here in Numbers appears that it doesn't cover all the territory that God had promised to them. So if you read it, and as you read it, if you look at a map, it gives the south, north, east, and west boundaries of the land that they're going to be given. And then basically this is it here. And you get on up here, that's what is in Numbers. But if you look at Deuteronomy and other passages and the territory that the people had when Solomon was king, I forgot about you. People can't see me over here. That's all right. You can hear me. when Solomon was king, then they did get all the territory that God had promised to them. And this is a huge big map because shows a little bit of Canaan right here. So when Solomon was king, and they finally got all the territory God promised them, from the river to Egypt right here, all the way up into here. And right here is Damascus, and Tyre. Well, this is just Canaan right here. Well, eventually Solomon had all that territory. But anyway, just wanted to point that out, that right now, in Numbers, when it gives the boundaries, it doesn't give all the territory that they eventually inherited, or that was conquered, and that was during the time of Solomon. Plain as mud? Okay. So in chapter 35, number 4, the Levite cities and the cities of refuge. You might put in your column here or in your space number four covers chapter 35 of Numbers. But if you want to put Joshua 20, verse 1 through 9, and Deuteronomy 4, verse 41 through 33, and I'll repeat those in a minute, those passages, including Numbers 35, talk about the cities of refuge and the Levite cities. Okay? Without reading everything in this paragraph here, tell me what the Levite cities were. What does that mean? Must have something to do with the Levite, huh? Who's they? The Levites don't have to farm?
They're priests.
They're priests? Did they have any territory at all?
Yeah.
Yes and no. They didn't have territory like Reuben, Gad, Manasseh, and Issachar, and so forth.
Yeah.
Well, what did they have then?
Cities with a little bit of land around them.
Okay. For their own cattle or sheep, whatever they might have had, the Levites were given how many cities?
Six.
The Levites were given 6 or 48 cities. They were given 48 cities. In those 48 cities,
six were refuge.
And we need to talk about what that is in just a minute. But the cities that were given to the Levites were 48 in number. And so the Levites are all gathered around these 48 cities in Jerusalem area, right? Yeah, you didn't get my question. I'm sure I didn't make it clear. Where are the 48 cities?
Spread out.
They're spread out all over the place. So the Levites are all over the land, 48 cities in all.
Very wise.
Very wise. Why did Brian say it was very wise? Don't answer.
Well, if they're priests, then you want them, you want them everywhere.
What did the priests, what was one of the responsibilities of the priest?
Teach
the law. Teach the people the law. Would that be advantageous to have 48 cities where Levites were so they could teach the people? Oh, that makes a whole lot of sense, doesn't it?
If they were actually doing that.
If they were actually doing that. But what's Brian referring to? When we get to the prophets, God condemns them for not doing that.
Exactly.
Okay. But we're not the prophets. We're in Numbers. There are six cities of refuge. So what is a city of refuge? Okay, this right in the middle of this paragraph. Six of the cities are to be designated cities of refuge, safe haven for those who would commit manslaughter. Numbers 35. In this provision, God distinguished between premeditated murder, which is worthy of death, and accidental death, which deserves a lesser punishment. So, I accidentally kill a guy. What's the punishment for murder?
Death.
Death. But in this instance, I can go to the city of refuge and flee there, flee to the city of refuge, and I'll not be put to death. You can't harm me in that city.
As long as
I stay there. And there's another condition. Go ahead, Ted.
Apparently, we've got something similar like that going on today.
Yeah,
they call
sanctuary cities.
Sanctuary cities.
Okay. How long did he have to, stay there, the person who has fled there?
Until the high priest dies.
Until he stands before
the high priest dies.
I can stay in that city of refuge and not be punished for anything that I did, the manslaughter, et cetera, until the priest, the high priest died, then I'm free to go home.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Steve.
35:12. Says, and the city shall be used a refuge from the avenger, so that the manslayer may not die until he stands before the congregation for trial. So how does that play in with the priest?
If there was provision for a trial to be had, and at the mouth of two or three Oh, I've already answered my question. At the mouth of two or three witnesses, if he was convicted of murder, he was taken out and punished for that. But as long as it was a non, how do I want to say it?
Accidental,
as this says here, God distinguishes between premeditated murder, which is worthy of death, and accidental death, which deserves a lesser punishment. Then I can stay there until the high priest dies. Ken? That's right. That's right. The avenger. If I kill somebody and I start heading toward the city of refuge, and there's the avenger, as he's called in some versions, catches up with me and chops my head off, it's just done. I didn't make it.
Case closed.
Pardon me, Mo.
Case is closed.
What if it was a self-defense?
There's provision there, and so Brian and I get in a fight, and I kill him, and to defend myself, I run to the city of refuge, and then there's determined whether or not it was self-defense or not.
There's a trial.
Kramer?
That was part of the purpose of the city of refuge, right, so that you could get a trial, and it's after that, if you are found innocent, that trial, then you have to live in the city of life.
Okay. Okay, right. And here's where, and I've already mentioned it, that the law says at the mouth, not just one witness, you've got to have the mouth of two or more witnesses. Well, our time's gone. This next section here, number 5, and just briefly, we've got 2 minutes to tell you. You remember last week or the week before, we talked about this part here, this passage here, 27:11, is omitted. It actually should be chapter 27. Where is it over here? I don't see it. Over right here. Lesson 11, 13 covers chapter 27, verse 23. But it doesn't mention this, and this is about the four daughters who weren't married, and their father died, etc. Ha-ha. This lesson goes into it some more, because chapter 36 does talk about those, the daughters of Zelophehad. And I don't know if there's anything new in there that we didn't mention when we looked at chapter 27.
There is.
It seemed like there is, but I can't remember what it was. Okay. Well, the year of Jubilee had to do with the punishment for crime.
No.
Okay.
It also had to do with the land. If you married outside your tribe, then your allotment, your inheritance, would go to the man or the other tribe. And at the year of Jubilee, that would be returned back to the inheritance.
Right. A lot of laws like that that are a little obscure sometimes, but and they're interesting to you who have a mind like a lawyer. but Mo's exactly right. The year of Jubilee has something to do with the land going back. But this has situation here. If they were married within the tribe, then the land would stay in their father's clan. But if they married, and could they have married outside of the tribe? I mean, anybody, not these four.
Yes.
They could marry other tribes, but if they did, then they didn't have any inheritance.
Their inheritance would go to
the tribe that they married. Yeah.
Father or man of that tribe.
All right. If you, yes.
Can you repeat those books and chapters
that
are in the report?
Oh, yeah. Chapter 35 of Numbers, Deuteronomy 4, verse 41 through 43, and Joshua 20, verse 1 through 9. Okay, our time's a little past gone. I want to hand out lesson 14. You take a copy of it. This is where we get into Deuteronomy. And we're switching the gears a little bit. Now, there's a whole lot in Numbers that we didn't cover, of course, but we tried to cover some things that would give us insight into to God's justice and to God's love, God's provision for the people in this situation and that situation and so on. So appreciate your participation today, and that's...